This Do Lectures episode features storyteller, writer and illustrator Amani Omeje, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2017.
It's really nice to be here. I'm so nervous, but it's been a dream of mine ever since I worked at the first adult Do Lecture to do a Do Lecture, and I'm like, it's pretty cool, dreams happen. So this guy lives in my head, talking to me, the little shit. So I was really nervous, and I was going to tell you about how I draw out my inner critic when I'm feeling overwhelmed. My friend was like, why don't you draw out your critic about the talk and put it on the slide? So that's what I did, and it actually really helped. Like, I do this to bring myself perspective, and I draw what it looks like in a ridiculous way. So I'm like, I'm not going to listen to you. So that's that. So my life looks a bit like that, as I'm sure everyone's have. Like, life is like that, but I feel like I'm going to walk you through most of the bottom bits. So I grew up in Devon. I looked after my mum from the age of 3. She had really bad diabetes, so I was like her carer. My dad's schizophrenic and lives in Canada, so that's like not a thing. So I looked after her for like all my life until I was 24 and I cut contact with her. Sadly, that dynamic and that responsibility really affected our relationship. She never really saw me. She only saw herself in me, which meant there was a lot of hatred. She was very abusive, physically and emotionally, and later developed psychosis, which I also cared for her through, which was horrendous. I'd never wish that upon anyone, and it feels like still like a black hole in my history. When I was 23, I found her hanging herself, and that was a very normal, sounds weird, but a very normal level of trauma for me. So like, I found her, cut her down, read the note that was like total hatred to me, like, you made this happen, had a little cry, went to bed. And I feel like that story, like, as intense as it is, was very normal, that level of like, just, yeah, horrible. A month later, I was traveling in Morocco and I was raped and attacked. And so that summer, those kind of two big things happened, and at the end of sort of my whole 23 years of hardcore shit happening too. And that was the beginning of me kind of going downhill, like my health. I'd been anorexic bulimic for a few years, which was the sort of beginning of my health struggling. But from that summer, my health went totally downhill. That's actually when I moved in. David and Claire very sweetly let me just sort of move in one day with my friend Alice. And that was when I started to take care of myself, because I had to, because I was super ill and I couldn't get out of bed. And then the sort of year went by, and then I ended up moving to California, and I actually lived where the Do Lectures happen in California. I actually lived there in Capabidia. It's beautiful. And I started seeing a therapist, which everyone had told me I needed to do for ages, but I was like, no. And actually it changed my life. So suddenly I had this woman there that was like there for me, like this person I'd needed for my whole life, because through everything happening, there wasn't support. The first time anyone asked if I had any support was when I was 23 and my mum had just been sectioned after trying to hang herself. I was like, the doctor was like, have you got any support? I was like, no. And so suddenly there was this lady there for me. And obviously, I had the breakdown that everyone said I'd needed for years, that I'd been resisting. I was like, no, I'm strong. But having a breakdown doesn't mean you're not strong, which I now know. And I overdosed when I was living there after about 5 months. And I came straight back here. I actually came to Cardigan, and then I moved to Bristol. And it was like my whole story and my like whole life of trauma just sort of exploded out, and I don't feel like it's ever gone back in, which is a good thing. It's just really overwhelming sometimes. So I was really struggling with like PTSD, obviously, and spent that first like year or two just totally, like, I felt like the other day I was trying to think of how to describe that time, because I still would like never ever want to go back there. It was horrible, but I somehow knew I had to stick with it. So I felt like a leaf just like blowing in the wind. And you know, I went from those sort of 24 years of trauma and like not feeling and just coping and surviving, which is what kids of trauma do. You know, I still hear adults like talk about something traumatic has happened in a kid's life, and they're like, the kid's just dealing with it so well. It's like, no shit, like that's what kids do. And then suddenly I was feeling everything, I was crumbling, like I couldn't cope. And and all these years of coping then bit me on the ass, and I couldn't cope with anything. But I stuck with it, and I didn't just like take drugs, I didn't numb myself. I feel like I numb myself with Netflix now, but for a few years, you know, I didn't, and I just wrote and I drew. I started blogging, and I started blogging not because I wanted to be famous or to be like known. I literally felt like I started blogging to survive. So I started just writing. It was like my online journal. It kind of went from, and it was anonymous. So I needed that like protection to know that my family couldn't read it. So I cut contact. I woke up from my overdose, and like literally the first thought was, I have to cut contact with my parents. And it's been the hardest thing I've ever done. Like every day I question it and I wonder what the hell I'm doing. And it feels really disrespectful and all these things, but I know it's still the right thing. Because I have all these like life truths that when you grow up, you know, you're modeled from your parents, like their beliefs, their patterns of behavior. And particularly if you've been the parent, like I was a parent from 3 years old. So I wasn't, you know, it's just really backwards. So I actually remember, like, there were all these, like, life truths, that I call them, that I feel like starting therapy. And my friend Piers, who used to be a therapist, and he was like, come on, I'll do you, like, an impromptu session. He was like, you need a therapist. I was like, no. And then I went to California and found one. But it was that summer that I was, like, starting to look after myself and stuff. And, yeah, he was like, he told me about unconditional love, and I thought it was a joke. I laughed, and I was like, what? You don't have to do anything for someone to love you. And, like, and that was a big life truth to suddenly, and then when he didn't laugh back, I was like, oh shit. Like, I thought that my worth was based on looking after my mum. And after cutting contact with her, I remember that first year, I really was like, shit, who am I? Like, that was my identity. And now I feel like I found myself in my identity, which I'll talk about with my writing and stuff. But there was a big, like, wobbly time of like, that was who I was. And I feel like our capitalist society also sort of drums in that our worth is based on what we do. And then sort of that coupled with my upbringing, there's just been loads of life truths that I'm now learning and discovering, and that's why I've had to have a break from my mum. This note card just says breakdown, like, to talk about that. I think I've already talked about it. So whilst I was blogging, I was continuing to see this therapist like via Skype that I've been seeing in America, who was just a rock. And that's when I started drawing cartoons similar to the one that you just saw. One day she just was like, I was feeling really overwhelmed with my inner critic, and she was like, what does it look like? And I was like, I described this ridiculous, like fat, spotty, like just jokes character. And she was like, you've got to draw that out. So I drew out this ridiculous guy. My friend I was living with was like, you can't listen to that if that's your inner critic. And it started this, like, literally 2 years I just spent in bed because my health was really bad, drawing cartoons and emailing them to my therapist. She loved it. And it was so healing. Like, I just got to explore how messed up our inner dialogue is. And I got to have that distance and perspective to mine. And I still obviously struggle with it, but in times I'm struggling with it, I write it out and I feel like it brings me that perspective. And then my cartoons sort of moved on from like drawing in my journal to like, on my iPad, and I found it just really helpful to kind of draw like things that words couldn't describe. Like, I found writing such a way of expressing myself, but the cartoons, like, that was when I was like, I didn't feel like I had my head above water. I was sort of just being shat on by seagulls. And this is when I was really ill. And I feel like, yeah, drawing these just has helped me express things that words cannot. Like that. So anyway, I continued to write, and then I applied to, I began to like share my blog with friends, and it was really funny. Like, I was talking to them when I was prepping for this talk. I was talking to a friend who sort of knew me from that point. She didn't know anything about my life, and she said that she's never had anything like it happen when I told her my blog address. Actually, I didn't even tell her my blog address. I just told her to Google like the name of my blog, and she went. She was like, it was like reading your journal, but it's all online for everyone to see. And it was so raw and naked. Like, it could. I've gone back to it being like, oh my god, like I could never do that now. But I desperately needed to. I went from one extreme to the other, like of everyone knowing nothing really, apart from close friends knowing a little bit, to like people knowing literally everything. And now I feel like I've got a bit of a balance. So, you know, social media for me since that point was totally a place to just share everything. And that's how I use it. And I love it. And people take the piss sometimes. But I have to remember to share the good bits too. But I feel like it's a real way of saying what's like on your heart. And some people can't handle it. But other people love it. And it gives them permission to do the same. So anyway, I applied for apprenticeship at Elephant Journal, which is this cool online magazine. And I worked for them for 4 years. And when I first sent my, 4 years, 4 months, when I sent them my first piece, they were like, yeah, we want to publish it, but we want to put it under your name because I was still writing anonymously. And I was like, shit, like I freaked out. I was like, I can't. And then I did. And it was like, took the sort of healing of writing and telling my story to another level because I had my name on the bottom of it and it was amazing. And since then I've never written anonymously again, but I needed that. People sometimes, like when you're writing about things that there's lots of shame about, which is what I write about, that's kind of my point of writing, is to challenge the shame in our society. But it's okay to need time to like find your voice and do it anonymously. And I needed that time of just like me, and it wasn't for anyone else. And people would be like, oh, your writing's amazing, like you should be writing for like magazines. And I was like, no, I'll get there, but I have to do this. And then Elephant Journal came and I was ready. So yeah, I wrote for them like 2 or 3 times a week and was editing loads of pieces, all people's stories. And I just fell in love with it. And I edited another project as well that was this beautiful collection of people's stories. And it made me realize that's what I'd been doing without realizing I'd been telling my story. And I wrote pieces that I read now and I'm like, shit, I was brave. Like just thing, like I wrote a series on healing a suicide attempt over the anniversary of my 2 year attempt. Like after attempting suicide, I was just searching, like Googling all the time for like a map or like a guide of how to do that time because it was just so confusing and lonely. And there was nothing, like there were some beautiful projects out there, but there was nothing I really needed to read that explained it all to me. So it was really empowering to write what I needed to read after my attempt. So that's what I did. And I like wrote this, writing's just so cool and healing. Like I wrote this whole story about when I was raped and I had these like four women that were like kind of doing it with me, like all through my computer. You know, they were like editing and kind of just like, I was sharing bits and I published it. And it was like, from that day, like my whole relationship with that event is less traumatic. It was amazing. And I also then wrote for this magazine called Rebel Society, which was also a dream. And that was a good lesson of finding your voice and sticking with it and not changing it to what you think other people like want to hear and want you to be like. So I'd heard about the magazine for ages ago and I loved it and it was like my dream to write for them. And I sent them something and they rejected it but I wrote it how I thought that they would want me to write it. So I changed my voice and I tried to be all like cool, like I thought they wanted. And then they rejected it. And then when I was writing for Elephant Journal, I had found my voice. And so I sent them something and then they were like, yeah. And then I had a column and wrote for them and I still write for them. And that was like, that was a real moment of like, okay, I'm not gonna change myself. And actually to prep for this talk, I was like binge watching loads of last year's Teen Dudes, and I was like, oh shit, everyone's got like really swanky PowerPoint presentations. I don't even know how you make a PowerPoint. Like someone just made this for me down in the shed 5 minutes ago. Like, and I was like freaking myself out that I needed to do that too. And then I was like, no, wait, that would go against everything I'm talking about. So I like, yeah, I still have to do it. Remind myself that my voice is enough. Like you don't have to change yourself for anyone else. And sometimes people won't take it, but that's okay. Like there are other places that will. So now I write for Huffington Post. I got that gig last year, which was really cool. It's like a stamp of, like, I've obviously always been a writer, but somehow that kind of just made me like be like, yeah, I'm a writer. So now if someone asks me what I do, I don't just be like, I write. I'm like, I'm a writer. And I feel a lot more resilient, and I feel like my writing has changed. It's still vulnerable and raw about the things that we don't talk about enough, which is the whole point of my writing, but it's less... like less naked, and I feel like more, yeah, resilient. So it feels cool to be there in that place with my writing. But I couldn't have forced that journey. So that's a real, like what I'd really stress is you can't force where you're going. Don't try and speed it up. And then last year I also started a project because I've just edited lots of other projects, but never had my own. And I started this really cheery subject. But it was amazing. And I gathered loads of stories from people about people who struggle with suicidal thoughts and feelings, and also people who have attempted suicide and sort of their whatever they wanted to share about that, about life afterwards. So it's a beautiful like collection of images and poems and pieces. And the whole point for me was that I was really keen on is it's unedited. So I, you know, a couple of times I did a little bit of grammar for someone, a few people wrote from English wasn't their first language, so I helped them a bit with that. But apart from that, it's like totally unedited, because something about when you're writing really raw pieces for magazines, they edit stuff like even just the title or just a little bit of a sentence, and it feels like you've kind of painted a picture and then they've kind of rubbed out a bit and put something else on. And it's like, for some articles, that's fine. Like when I write more journalistic pieces, that's fine. But with my like raw stuff, just that would like hurt. So I really wanted to make a space where people could share whatever they want. Now I am making one about post-traumatic stress. So I'm in the process of gathering stories for that. And I'm going to like Berlin in the autumn to talk about suicide and chronic illness, because I still really struggle with my health and being vulnerable and stuff. So what's cool about the last 5 or 6 years is I went from one extreme of what I was doing in my life was nothing to do with my struggle to like my struggle is now what I do, and it's not a secret, which is really cool. So now I've got some life tips. Oh wait, and another cartoon. That's how I feel most of the time. Okay, my life tips. Be enthusiastic and offer to help. I'm so jammy, like friends always are like, what the fuck, like how have you got to do that again? Like when I was at uni, for example, I was working loads in East Africa, and I got to go 4 times without paying because this guy had come and done a lecture. He was a sports presenter and he ran this beautiful project using sport as a form of social change, which is what I ended up working in after uni. And I literally just went up to him afterwards, like, this is amazing, like, how can I help? And I ended up going to Africa loads, and then, and, you know, and like that then led to other trips to Africa and led to me getting a PhD when I didn't even know one of the answers in the interview that I really should have known, but it was because I'd had all this experience. And it still happens that I just, like, if you talk to people and you show enthusiasm, like, I just get so many opportunities that are really cool from doing that. So I really recommend that. And experience is so valuable. No one's got their shit together. So this is something I still have to remind myself, because it's really easy to look at people that you really admire and just be like, oh, they must have it all sorted out, like figured out. And it's like, no. Like no one, not even like 50-year-olds. Maybe they just give less of a fuck when they're that old. But sorry, not that old. But sorry. My bad. moving on. Be honest and vulnerable. It kind of what your talk was about that struck me too is like some people can't handle it, and that's okay. And some people will shame you for telling your story and it will make them feel uncomfortable, but that's because they can't cope with their story and their struggle. That's not because what you're doing and sharing is wrong. So I just can't stress enough about how to share what's on your heart and be honest and be true. It's okay to quit. You know, I got this PhD, it was like my total dream. I was leading an amazing like one-off project for Comic Relief, and UNICEF were like, you're a pioneer for your generation. And I was like in this amazing opportunity that I'd wanted for years, but my health was deteriorating. But mainly my everyday was like me in an office on my own, and that's like so not what I do. And I do spend a lot of time now on my own in bed on my computer because of my health, but it's different. I'm connecting with people all the time, writing articles or social media or whatever. So it was a really hard decision to make. And I've still often wonder if I did the right thing, but I do know I did because it wasn't working for me. Which brings me to, it's the everyday that counts. Like at the PhD, the bigger picture was my dream, and I was going to be going loads to Africa and doing amazing things. But the everyday, which is what you remember and what you're experiencing every single day, was just me in an office on my own, and I was miserable. I was just like, what's that? It's the microphone. When you feel stuck or scared, draw or write what your inner critic is saying. I've spoken about that, but I really highly recommend like trying to start this practice of just like writing it out, because it brings you perspective and you realize it's a load of bullshit, and you'd never say that ever out loud to someone else. Like the stuff we say to ourselves is like, it always makes me laugh because I'm like, it's so mean. Success is not about the amount of followers you have, it's about the quality of connections you've made and the impact your work has. It's really easy with our social media culture to fall into like wanting the most amount of followers. Or when I was writing for Elephant Journal, you know, there's the amount of readers on the bottom of your article. And I did fall in for a while of like, sort of, you know, being like, oh my God, only 1,000 people have read it. And then it's like, geez, 1,000 people is loads, but like, oh, 70,000 people have read this. That means that that's really good. So I need to write like that again. And it's like, I had to quickly put a stop to that because it messed up the authenticity of my writing. And like, for example, one lady wrote to me halfway through my apprenticeship with them and was like, thank you so much for your articles. I've been printing them out. Oh my God, it makes me like tear up whenever I think of this. She was like, I've been printing them out and sending them to my daughter in prison. You have a way of cutting through the bullshit and offering us hope. And I was just like if that article hadn't been read by any, or my articles hadn't been read by anyone else but them, that would have been worth it because the impact was really, felt really good. And lastly, often when you're being really brave, you feel really stupid. So this is just like my own little bit of research I've done with myself and with my friends. I swear down, like obviously sometimes we can just be being really stupid, but most of the time, like when you're being really brave, you'll feel like an idiot. Like I watch my friends do something really brave and they're like whether it's sending a message to someone they fell out with or like doing, you know, sending a piece of writing to someone to see if they want it. And it's like, you feel like an idiot and you feel really exposed. And every time when I write and I feel like I'm gonna throw up when I hit publish, then I know that I've written the right thing. But every single time, like even after like 5 years of writing, I'll put something on Facebook and then be like, ah, shit. And then I'll close my laptop and then go back later. And it's like, all right, like 40 people have commented on your post. And all being like, thank you. So I feel like that, I don't know, just remember that when you're being really brave, you will feel really stupid. And that doesn't mean you've done the wrong thing. So go out and be brave. And good luck. Goodbye.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.